Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Zohara Hieronymus, who is the author of White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. She is an award-winning radio broadcaster, environmental activist, and professional artist, and she hosted a national radio program, Future Talk, until 2008, and currently co-hosts 21st Century Radio. Temple of Health has been on for about 23 years, so we're both old radio show hosts. We're getting older anyway. Welcome, Zohara. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining me. Do you prefer to be called Susan or Dr. Kolb?
You can call me Susan.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
So I've been a long-time communicator telepathically with animals as well, and I'm really happy to see that you wrote this book. The types of communications we can have with animals are absolutely amazing, and most people are not aware of the degree at which the animal wisdom exists.
You know, anybody who turns towards elder lore from any indigenous tradition anywhere in the world will discover that that was the norm. Historically, every human on Earth was aware that we and the Earth are one. We didn't, like, come out of the world. We're in the world. We're in the Earth. We are Earth beings. Animals, particularly now, completely conscious of the debilitating state that our world is facing, is imploring humans to open up to nature, everything, to open up to the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the human and the spirit being kingdom, because we are all part of life talking. And the way in which animals choose to help humans can be either they come into your life physically, they come into your life through a dream, they come into your life through a book you pick up, they come into your life maybe from a childhood experience or a personal sense of affiliation. The beauty of these relationships, whether it's with the dog at your house or the squirrel running up the tree outside your house, is that they all can speak to each other. And everything in the world is capable of communicating with everything else in the world, either in the presence of each other or at a distance. It really depends on, A, what our intentions are as humans using our awareness and consciousness, and then what we pay attention to once it comes into our field of view.
I had interviewed a very telepathic veterinarian one time, a female veterinarian who would merge with the animal and know exactly what was wrong with it, like to the extent of she knew that the cat had a diaphragmatic hernia, you know.
Wow.
I mean, once you know anatomy, and then the animal can tell you what's wrong with it, and then, of course, you do the test to prove it, and then you do the surgery. But there are some amazing intuitive beings who are veterinarians as well as neonatologists. You can imagine taking care of these little tiny infants, and they can't really give a history. So
yeah.
I've always just loved to talk to people who worked in fields that were where this communication was critical.
And communication's the right word. You know, people often say, well, do you talk to the animals? And I'm quick to point out, generally, it's more about listening to them. And then asking
Yeah, they show you pictures,
questions.
You know. It's not necessarily English language. It's more impressions and sometimes emotions. If animals are upset, they will tell you they're upset by showing you that they're upset. You know, there's
Yeah, my experience is the way I kind of describe how it is that I receive, and always have, even when I was a little girl, is that for me it's like watching a movie. It's almost mm-hmm. a foreign film where subtitles are in English, and that's the way my mind translates light signals coming in, which is really what we mm-hmm. all are. And they can speak whatever language. But it's funny because as a child I thought, and I actually prayed to be able to talk to the animals when I was as young as six. It took mm-hmm. many decades to be able to do it fluently without tremendous effort. But the thing that I found so remarkable is oftentimes people think, well, I'm going to learn how to interpret a bird's call, and some natives can, or I'm going to learn how to interpret what the dog's howl is saying. And what, of mm-hmm. course, any telepath discovers is that we all speak a universal language, and it's just
right.
a question of coming into rapport with that which you are focusing on, whether it's the plant you're trying to ask, is this the right plant for this ailment or this healing,
mm-hmm.
or a human that's 1,000 miles away when you say, are you okay? And again,
right.
it comes back to where we focus our attention, suspend our mm-hmm. judgment. And I'd also like to say the other thing, Susan, is a really superior is not really the right word, a cultivated humility. That would be the right word, a cultivated humility, because none of this is about the receiving human. It's about the human being of service to whatever it is the human is focused on.
That's correct. You remember the stories about Dr. Richard Bach. He was probably one of the most famous people that merged with nature, specifically flowers, and determined how the flower essences could help the emotional disruptions of humans.
Yeah, all of Bach's flower remedies, you're right, were based on his own communications with the plant world.
Right. So that was like, I think that was in the 1800s, or the 1900s, early 1900s. So, you know, even now, major breakthroughs, because I consider the Bach flower remedies, and then, of course, there was other flower remedies after that, probably in a similar vein. But we really are able to merge with nature and discover, like some of the things in the rainforest. There's predictions right now that some of the things in the rainforest are going to be discovered to be very, very effective for human disease that haven't been discovered yet. You know, so this is a prophecy.
Well, about 80% of our medicinals are in the rainforest, which is why those of us who are awake understand not only are they the lungs of the planet, but they're the pharmaceutical, natural pharmaceutical lab on Earth.
So, you know, as we become more skilled at this communication, and as you say, it's with the mineral kingdom, so we can determine the crystals and the mineral, how they can be used for healing. It's the plant kingdom, and then the animal kingdom. Well, this is primarily what your book's about, because of the great messages that the different animals have for humans at this particular time.
Yeah, so, and for those who have not read White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, I describe in the beginning how this happened to me. I was washing dishes in the spring of 2013, and I had this waking vision of all these white mm-hmm. spirit animals, about 12 or 15 of them coming around me. And these are animals that are white, unlike their kin species. So the black mm-hmm. bear in British Columbia has a white bear, or the normative mm-hmm. wolves we see, brindle and black, there's a white wolf. The same thing with the elephants in India and Africa. They are revered as very holy beings. And one of the things that occurred as a result of the vision is they came to me, and when I saw them standing around me, I really felt like I was before revered elders. So I immediately asked them, you know, why have you come to me? And secondly, mm-hmm. what can I do for you? And in unison, in a kind of unusual fashion, even though it was a shark and a whale and a buffalo and a wolf and an elephant, et cetera, they said, please tell our story. And mm-hmm. I took a year before I even made the proposal to my publisher, Inner Traditions Bear and Company.
That's great, Bear and Company.
yeah, exactly, Bear and Company. I thought, how appropriate, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
And I dreamt with the animals. I really wanted to see if I was able. I'm a waking telepath, and I had never really mm-hmm. practiced dream telepathy, which is a shamanistic tool common to pretty much shamans anywhere on the planet, that they will dream, should I help this person or this ecosystem? Mm-hmm. Is now the time? What can I do? And they really ask the universe, the cosmic pool, so to speak, of all consciousness, you know, is this where I should be, and how should I do it, and can I, may I, should I, sort of the three questions mm-hmm. dowsers always ask. And I wanted to see if I was capable of communicating in this fashion as shamans mm-hmm. do, which is through dreams, and that's what I did. So for a year before I even started to write the book, I practiced dreaming with each of the animals that I cover in the book. So there's mm-hmm. lion, wolf, buffalo, elephant, and who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting.
Bear.
Righto. And the way in which I did it was, before reading anything specific about their ecosystems or about the way they live their lives, the kind mm-hmm. of biology, sociology, et cetera, I just dreamt. And I dreamt with them one at a time for a month at a time. Mm-hmm. And when I discovered the way in which they use dream as well to communicate with humans, because they also dream. And mm-hmm. I remember Dawn Brunke on her work about the polar bears. The bears started dreaming her into their dream landscape before she dreamt them into her dream landscape. And it's mm-hmm. and I'd like to say, and the reason I say this is that it's very important because, you know, there are a lot of workshops, I'm sure you're aware of them, all around the world about totem animals. And mm-hmm. sometimes I feel that the reality of this compact gets diminished in these workshops. It's not a weekend commitment. It's not a one-week commitment. So if, for instance, a person in the listening audience says, I really know that the birds are suffering and that's who I want to help, when you make a commitment, it's as real as a commitment to a living human that you make a commitment to. And mm-hmm. and one should honor that commitment. And it doesn't mean you have to turn your life upside down like many sanctuary people do to commit their entire lives to stewarding these beautiful beings. Mm-hmm. But when you make a commitment to helping a plant, a rock, a mountain, a river, a bear, a squirrel, a rabbit. These are serious commitments, and that's the thing I suggest to people is to remember that you're making an oath from your heart, virtually, that you have right. lovingly come into rapport, and they with you, and they've come to you because they also recognize the open-heartedness, the open-mindedness, but this is mm-hmm. a partnership, and the partnerships are very real, mm-hmm. and so I just want to remind everybody, when you practice totem animal magic or bringing animals into your dreams or even just asking the animals around you in your ecosystem what they need, if they tell you, well, we need better water, mm-hmm. and you say, okay, then do something about it. And it doesn't mean right. it has to be enormous. You don't have to fix the whole world. You just have to pay attention to the little place mm-hmm. in the world we each live.
Yeah, I want to also point out to the listening audience, these are not albino animals. Albino is a genetic defect that they have pink eyes and, you know, lack of pigment. These are actually white animals. And I don't know whether you know about this, Zahara, but there is a white squirrel festival every year in Brevard, North Carolina. You're
I
in
do not know
Owings
about
Mill,
that.
Maryland. You may want to come down for it. I usually try to go up there for it. But
how
the
lovely.
White squirrels are picture, you know, there's a picture contest and they're, you know, they've got all sorts of white squirrel things that that they honor. And I've been going for the last several years.
At whitespiritanimals.com, I've started posting pictures and things that people send me from around the world, the white moose mm-hmm. and other animals. So I'll have to get some of the white squirrel. No, you're absolutely right. And the recessive gene, interestingly enough, is the same as a human has who has red hair and fair skin.
Mm-hmm.
And which is
right.
quite interesting, because when I first started doing the real research into the books and the traditions and pictures, et cetera, there's this Celtic picture often of a red-haired maiden riding a white bear. And I thought,
right.
isn't that interesting
yeah.
that the white bear mm-hmm. and the red-haired Celtic woman share the same recessive gene, which means you have to get that recessive gene from both parents. So it could be two
right.
black bears that produce a white bear.
Mm-hmm. So, well, why don't we start off with, unless there's anything else you want to add, you want to start off with the white bear and what the white bear told you and what the lesson of the white bear is.
Well, I think if you don't mind, I'd like to just step back for a second about some
mm-hmm.
of the things that they all share in common in case we run
okay.
out of time when we get into particulars.
Sure.
And it was an interesting experience for me because, like you and anybody else in the audience who meditates or practices using their intuition and is comfortable with vision work, et cetera, they, interestingly enough, pointed to the heavens when they were first talking to me. And then I sort of, you know, sat down and realized what they were showing me is that there are star systems above that each of these animals is represented by. And that's
mm-hmm.
a whole other layer of cosmic alignment showing them that they are messengers of the planet, and also
right.
off-planet, and that's another thing they all share in common. When you look to the indigenous traditions that honor each of these animals in the locations in which they've been revered since the last ice age, they all point to off-planet elders having come to help us after the last ice age, and even to survive
mm-hmm.
the ice age. So the reason it said in each of these traditions, whether it's about the bear, the wolf, the lion, the elephant, etc., is that they come to us during calamitous times or times when people say the earth will cleanse herself. And for centuries, these weren't really seen. And no, natives who knew of their whereabouts never talked to outsiders about them. They were considered very
mm-hmm.
holy signs and holy beings. And it's only since the 1930s and now more recently in the 70s, 80s to where we are today that there are more and more white animals showing up and more in each of these particular locations that are being born, which tells us of the immediacy with which they're trying to communicate with us.
Well, there was an energetic event last night that was very, very significant. And our information is that this particular shift, this energetic shift called ascension, is upon us right now. And so we're not waiting years for this. This is imminent. And I think it is ongoing.
And the fact that Jupiter's now in Scorpio tells us that all of those who want to expand their psychic intuition, their empathic capacities, their ability to speak and talk with all of life, is that we have a good chance at it. And these kids that we see still in high school taking on this issue, and I just want to mention it, of gun control, et cetera, these are children that were born with Pluto in Sagittarius. You and I were born with Pluto in Leo, which is we wanted to make a change in the world about family and individualism and, working collectively. But Sagittarians, so these kids are born with, and this tells us about the time we're in, long vision, true spiritual beliefs, and that's why when they say BS, they get it. And it's a beautiful addition to the society on Earth that we have a whole group, a whole generation now who, for the last 18 years, were born with Jupiter and Sagittarius. So they have a very long view, but also believe in the ability to hit the mark by aiming at it.
Mm-hmm. Right, the archer. I'm a double Sag, so I understand that.
Got it. So those are several of the things. Is that, like, for instance, the bear is in the heavens as the Little Dipper and the Big Dipper. And they also represent where all the longitudes on Earth come together. So it tells us automatically something about there, teaching us about the unity we all share. They're also considered guardians, if you will, of the Great Spirit, which presumably comes from the North. So when you start actually studying the native traditions worldwide about each of these sacred animals, one discovers that they have cosmic purposes. An example for elephant. Elephant is said to stir the Milky Way, which is where everything ushers from that manifests on Earth. The lion is said to be the noble guardian of the world and was once, really considered in alchemy as the pure heart. When we really refine ourselves, we inherit the golden-hearted nobility that the lion was always ascribed in the Babylonian, Mesopotamian, other cultures. The goddess of heaven, who presumably ruled over the world, is seen holding two lions on a leash. And, lions were on the throne of King Solomon, and lions have been associated with royalty throughout time. So when we start visiting past cultures and their relationship with these particular animals and others that I don't discuss in this book, we find that there have been millennium of human civilizations that have had a relationship with these animals, not as something different from them in terms of sentience, different only in the sense of purpose. And I think that's the biggest thing I've tried to communicate in my book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, is that these are sentient beings just like us. And we have made the horrible error for the last 600 years or so under Cartesian materialism to thinking that we can experiment on them, we can treat them horribly to eat them, we can do whatever we want to them, and, there's no pain, there's no suffering, they don't have family. All of that is not true. They have all of the same kinds of experiences that humans do, and this can be proven scientifically now without doubt. And when any animal watcher, somebody who loves elephants and sees them, or somebody who loves bears or wolves, and you watch their communities, they have family, they have memory, they have history, they have food preferences, they have joy, they have suffering, they have grief, they have happiness, they have playfulness. And the thing that they all share in common, this particular group of mammals, and they're all apex guardians of the ecosystems in which we find them, is that they are all matrilineal or matriarchal cultures. The animal cultures revolve around the well-being of the mother and offspring. And that's an ethos of care that they specifically said humanity has lost. And we can certainly see that by looking around the world or in our own community.
And they tend to be a lot smarter than us, too. Wasn't it the elephant that broke away? Because, of course, it's really hard to hold an elephant anywhere, if you think about it. Elephant that broke away before the tsunami in Thailand. You know, that there's that
story.
Oh,
yeah, and lots of animals. I actually describe a story that I had decided to every 10 years I kind of shift my focus. And I had decided about 7 years ago that this was going to be my decade of animal communication. These kind of naturally, seamlessly fall into order. And I decided that I would just try. First, I thought I'd go to the zoo and talk to the animals, but I thought the suffering would just be too much for me. So I decided I'd just sort of tune in if I could, and I was sort of like just saying, you know, talk to me if you need me. And what happened was, before the tsunami that hit, I forget the year it was already, in Japan, when the nuclear facilities melted down, in Fukushima, Japan, for 2 weeks, every time I went to sleep, and sometimes during the day, I would hear animals screaming, a cacophony of screaming, snakes hissing, you know, you would hear monkeys screaming like you do when there's something bad in their area, all kinds of animal noises, and it was really difficult for me. They would come and go during the day, it would infiltrate my sleep, and then it stopped. All of a sudden, it just stopped. And I'd said to my husband, if this goes on like this, there's no way I can be of service. I can't listen to all this pain and suffering. But it stopped on the day of the tsunami. And what I think had happened is that, just like they know now, animals, insects, ants in particular, sheep, they're very sensitive to earth changes. What's that? Anyway, I said they're very sensitive to earth changes. In fact, in Europe, there's now, I forget which country, they're collaring sheep to watch them so that they know when an earthquake is coming. But yes, animals are very sensitive to the subtle vibrations that we once were as well, and some humans still are. And so that's another thing that they want to help us with, is to let us know about earth changes and what to do to be safe and how we can protect our ecosystems. So wolf is an example. I had a dream several nights in a row of this African-American gentleman in an empty truck. And I really couldn't figure out what the dream meant. But on the third day, I got it. Because the truck, he said, well, I haven't decided if I should call it preservation. And then another night, he said, but maybe I should call it conservation. Or maybe I should call it restoration. And then I finally got it. Wolf was saying, CPR, that's what the earth needs. Conservation, preservation, restoration, meaning we are in such dire straits that we need to administer CPR to our planet.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We're back with Zohara Hieronymus, who is the author of White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. Well, let's continue where we left off. We had a little bit of technical issues there.
Well, I was sharing some of the things that all of these great beings share in common, and it doesn't matter whether it's the Zulu speaking about the white lion, or the Buddha speaking about the white elephant, or the native tradition speaking about white wolf in our own continent, though wolves are all over the world, or the bears, etc. The thing that is, I think, so important to appreciate is something that's not really talked about much in the public. You know, there was a 2014, and I think it's important to share because the elders consider their arrival as signs of change. You know, the Lakota have beautiful stories about white buffalo, calf woman bringing them pipe ceremony and sweat ceremony and naming ceremony and marriage ceremony, and basically, as some will say, put the mind of white buffalo into the mind of Indians so that they knew how to live properly. And buffalo and natives on our continent were so integral to each other's well-being that buffalo to this day is here to teach us gratitude and how to restore soil. But I think it's important to appreciate that they are going extinct. All of these animals, even the purebred buffalo, while there might be a million buffalo existent today, or bison, wood bison is what we actually have in this continent, most of them are not purebred buffalo, they're cattle buffalo. So the purebred buffalo, like we have at Yellowstone National Park, or as Cynthia Hart, who I write about in this book, the White Bison Association, have purebred buffalo, and that's very different than these hybrids that are created through the imprisonment, if you will, or the lot containment of buffalo and cattle together. When they are left in the wild side by side, they don't interbreed. Right. So this is a human-made calamity in the same way we see with wolf and dog. Tamrek Song, who writes beautifully about tracking in the wild and coming into communion with nature, is opening up a sanctuary for wolf dogs because they can't live in the wild and they can't live with humans. And people have done this thinking it's great status to own a wolf, but it's really horrible for their spirit, for their purpose, as well as for dog. So what I was going to say is all of these animals are aware that not only are they going extinct, but so is most of our life form on planet. You know, in 2014, the World Wildlife Fund, they have a Living Planet report, and they reported that our wild vertebrate population on Earth, that's mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish, declined by 52% between 1970 and 2010. So we're in what's called the sixth extinction, though the Maya have another name for the flowering of the sixth sun. We are, Susan, losing 27,000 species a year. Used to be a background rate of 1 to 10 a year. So at this accelerated rate of ecosystem collapse, it's estimated that 50% of the species on Earth will be extinct in 30 years. And I was aware of this because I report so much on ecological realities. And so when the animals first came to me, what I asked each of them, you know, was I asked the bear, I asked the lion, I asked the elephant, I asked the wolf, and I asked the buffalo, what can we do? How can we preserve more life on Earth? And they said to me, save as many of us as you can. And this is important because each of them, despite humans liking to call the bear, the lion, or the wolf predatory, and then we justify killing them, or we deem it a human entitlement to, you know, commit what I call animalcide, where we kill off entire herds of elephants, hack off their tusks and limbs for illegal trafficking, et cetera, is that without these animals, these major ecosystems will collapse. The lions in the savannah, the bears in our woods, the wolves across all terrain, the elephant where they are, because they open up the forest canopy for the other animals in Africa and India. They create the water wallows so that animals have fresh water pools after it rains. You know, humans follow elephants, actually, to find water because they're so exceptional at dowsing for water. So this reality of these animals going extinct and are not slowing down our butchery of them, and in fact, the hunting people, people who like to hunt, and they call it sport, though sport means people with equal terms and equal rules, and it's not a sport, it's murder, and it's calculated murder from my vantage point, is that this will accelerate species extinction. You know, if the purpose of these animals coming to me primarily was to say that without them, our planet will be in worse condition than it currently is, and the destabilization of major ecosystems, whether they be rivers or mountains or forests or prairies, is going to accelerate if we don't preserve them, because as the capstone guardian of an ecosystem, everything flows down from them. It's not to say we don't make the effort to save the other species in those ecosystems, but these are the primary guardians. And the other animals in their ecosystems regard them as so. So, you know, when you think about it, I've joked, though it's not really funny. It's like a sarcastic commentary on our populations, our civilization in general. If, for instance, mm-hmm. and you tell me if you agree, Susan, if we lost a baseball league 1 week, a basketball league another, a soccer league another week, and then the football league, I think the whole world would be in an uproar. Don't you think so?
Absolutely.
And so how ill are we? I mean, there's a psychological term for what has fostered the kind of abuse that we show to the earth, whether it's our water, our air, each other, each other's cultures, countries, each other's freedom, absolute right as human sovereigns, is mm-hmm. I try to really understand, because I used to be a very, very, very angry activist. And I admit that. I started at 14. I'm now in my mid-60s. And I was, mm-hmm. like, just so angry with people who did wrong things, and I just could never understand, how can they do it? How can they dump effluents into the stream? How can they, you know, destroy whole mountaintops for things we don't need to do?
It's called ignorance.
Well, I came across...
It's called ignorance. They don't understand that they're part of the planet. All they're doing is poisoning themselves. I mean, look at Fukushima. I mean, look at anything that is, look at the Gulf oil spill.
Yeah.
The oil volcano, as they called it, underneath the thing. I mean, we basically destroy ecosystems all over the place in a real severe fashion with radiation, with chemicals, with the stupidity. You know, cutting down the rainforest at an accelerated rate, not realizing that it's, as you say, the lungs of the planet. It's just ignorance. But, you know, nature, humans don't understand in general. Now, I think the shamans understand this, the spiritual leaders understand this, but the earth is a being of being in itself and a greater being than any human, and will basically do whatever is necessary to survive, even if it means the extinction of the humans.
Yeah, I agree with you.
We're not the top dog on the planet, because the planet is the top dog,
Right.
So the planet can cleanse itself, it can wipe us out.
Yeah,
or the solar
totally.
System, there's things that can occur. And you say in your book, and this is so true, every approximately 12,000 years, there's a cataclysm that probably is heralded in by Nibiru or Planet X, with the meteors, the asteroids hitting the Earth, the volcanoes, tsunamis, and earthquakes. We've been in that for a while, but we are going to face a pole shift here, probably very shortly. And when that happens, it probably won't be as bad as the Ice Age, you know, the last cataclysm, because that really wiped out a huge amount of life on Earth. But
Well, you know, one of the things that I observed, because somebody said to me, well, do you think everything goes extinct? And I said, no, it looks to me like we're paring down the scale of size. Because mm-hmm. during the Ice Age, when we lost the enormous mammoth bisons, which were related to the mammoth elephants,
right.
We now have them. They're just one-tenth the size that they originally were. Same thing with the dragon. I'm certain there were dragons on Earth, and we see them in the Komodo dragon. So, and they can mm-hmm. even find the species link, you know, the DNA to them. So I think it could even be so with humans. You know, when you look at the elder traditions and off-planet descriptions of the little people that inhabit our Earth, whether they're inside the Earth or they're on the surface mm-hmm. of the Earth, whether they're interdimensional beings or physical beings, it doesn't really matter, because we are simultaneously in multi-dimensions. But I wanted to share something that I observed, and maybe it makes some sense and maybe it doesn't, because like I said, I was just so angry at humans. I still am pretty angry at humans mm-hmm. for being so selfish and so greedy and so destructive and so violent. But I was trying mm-hmm. to appreciate, well, where did we go off the awareness that we are all one? Truthfully, mm-hmm. there is no way. I joke, you know, it's all of us together, or Susan, it's all of us together. And this is the truth. And what I discovered was, In 1583, and this will sound arcane to people, but when you really reflect on it, it might explain why we're so off-kilter. Pope Gregory mm-hmm. XIII took us off the lunar calendar and put us on a solar Gregorian calendar. This means mm-hmm. the millennium of matriarchy's systematic alignment with the cycles of the moon was eviscerated, was completely mm-hmm. removed from our consciousness. But we are mm-hmm. water beings. We're really more like rivers than anything else. We're tidal beings. And the moon affects our emotions, our consciousness, our biology. I even think it affects the DNA in a way that it zips and unzips between the new moon and the full moon. And it might mm-hmm. explain why on full moons we have so many ritual, and at new moons we have prayers towards the full moon. So we were mm-hmm. removed from understanding our biology as water beings related to the moon and the tides. And then the next horrible thing that happened to us was in 1675, and then it was formalized in 1851. And this is when we were taken off the native meridian that had been used worldwide by societies everywhere on Earth, which was the three great pyramids that point to the Orion Belt, which points to the galactic mm-hmm. center. And what that tells us, that at one point when people calculated where to put something on Earth, whether it was a stone circle or a holy chapel, it was always oriented towards the galactic center, which mm-hmm. meant that a stone circle in Ohio was related to a stone circle in Egypt or wherever else it was. So right. when the British established the Greenwich Meridian to help sailors and, you know, to kind of figure out mm-hmm. the time on Earth, and then it became uniform in 1851. It started in 1675. That means that we were no longer conscious of our relationship to the galactic center. So we lost the celestial signatories, you know, these anchors mm-hmm. for civilizations on and off Earth also, where sacred geometries are calculated. And you can see it when you move everything back to the Greenwich Meridian, which astrologically is a significant house change. One can then calculate and see the actual geometric relationship, say, between the pyramid on Mars and the pyramid on Earth. But mm-hmm. when we got taken off of it and the Greenwich Meridian became the, so to speak, center of our universe, it was really like the Gregorian calendar change. It was these procession of empires, and I feel that preceded everything in disconnecting us from the living Earth beings that we are.
Well, have you heard of the Urantia book?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in Urantia, it talks about the Luciferian Rebellion, which was about 200,000 years ago. And I think that Lucifer, who was in charge of, I think, 36 planets at the time, petitioned the administration for more free will, and it was granted. And I think that the ascension is the reversal of the Luciferian Rebellion. What happened with the Luciferian Rebellion is that the vibratory rate of everything lowered. Mm-hmm. And then a kind of quarantine occurred around these planets where when you were born into them, you didn't remember your past lives. So your connection to spirit was really difficult unless you were a very, very high initiate or a master. So like the Dalai Lama, for example, is aware of his past lives, but not that many people are. So I think it started with the Luciferian Rebellion. Now, part of, if you listen to David Wilcox and Corey Good, the limited disclosure, which is going to come out, is about the ancient builder race. Have you heard about them?
Sure.
The ancient builder race were about 35 to 45 feet tall. They were kicked out of their home because they had a lot of enemies and probably were pretty violent, and came to our solar system. And this is well before humans were developed. So they colonized asteroids, the moon, the area under the Sahara Desert, according to the information coming out of many sources, but this is what Corey Good and David Wilcox are saying, that it's been agreed for limited disclosure. So Antarctica, under the Sahara Desert, the moon, and asteroids were built out with these huge things for 45-foot people. And their enemies came in and killed them, according to the history. So there was a whole bunch of dead ancient builder race people on the moon. they say that if you just dig down 100 feet to 150 feet in the Sahara Desert, you'll find all sorts of, you know, areas that will prove this. And, of course, Antarctica, we all know they're finding all sorts of things in Antarctica that might be consistent with the ancient builder race. The ancient builder race was wiped out a long time ago. So the Anunnaki came in, and they're, what, 12 to 17 feet. They're the giants that you talk about in your book. They had red hair, and they were the, you know, the gods of the Norse gods and Egyptian and Roman gods. And so they were, they inhabited a lot of these areas that the ancient builder race did, but they just modified it because they were a lot shorter. So, so we basically have, you know, I would say it started with the Luciferian Rebellion, but that basically the ascension, which is a planetary event, is the reversal of the Luciferian Rebellion. I think that's the best way, at least that's the best way I can understand what we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's all good news. I think that when we do ascend, the animals will be safe. I think that all of these other dark, you know, habits and teachings and the satanic rituals and the pedophile stuff and everything will not be part of the new world. So, you know, the new world or the new ascended earth will be a place that you'll prefer living.
We would hope so. I mean, you know, it's really interesting when you look at any tradition. You know, paradise is our native home, and a well, healthy humanity, along with everything else that we co-arise with, is really the what's the right word? Is natural versus what we've created is so unnatural. And
well, here, dark force energies prevail. Okay, now look at Mother Teresa. How much of Mother Teresa's organization do you think is still intact?
I have no idea.
Well, probably not much. And when she was here, she had all sorts of problems. She had all sorts of people, you know, trying to, if you really read the history, she had all sorts of really negative attacks. Anybody who tries to do anything here gets all sorts of horrible negative attacks. From assassination attempts to financial challenges to, you know, being discredited to everything they can throw at you, they will, okay? So the point is you can't really build anything in the third dimension. You just can't. I mean, it just isn't possible. So therefore, the hope is that in the ascended earth, where we don't have all of this negativity that is really the basis of most of our world government, our money system, our corporate America is affected by it, and not just, I mean, world corporations are affected by it. We just have so much that we won't have to put up with that we actually can start building something.
You know, the important reality to that is we are building it now. One of the things that Elephant taught me is the same thing Rudolf Steiner teaches, that when any one of us, you know, does a loving deed, sends out a prayer of grace and love and stewardship and care, is really seeding the future. So when we appreciate that we are multidimensional beings in an omniverse, we are already in the arising of the ascension, so to speak. And are in Kabbalah, which I'm also a student and teacher of. I've written two books on the Kabbalistic teaching. One was on the seven prophetesses of ancient Israel, and the other was on how did they actually bring down the Holy Spirit into the Ohel Moed, into the tabernacle. And I wrote about that as well, and what one discovered is that all of these things are about human ascension towards resurrection. Yes, even in Judaism, people don't realize this, but that it's the result of consciousness and doing good. It's really not about how much can I get for myself. It's how much can I give to the world, because we are not born for ourselves alone. We're each incarnate for the world. And I like to remind people who say, well, I don't have any power, I don't have any money, I'm struggling to pay my bills. And I say to them, all you have to do is send out a prayer. Speaking prayer to me is the most powerful tool humans have, and I don't think we've awakened to it yet as a society, as a civilization en masse. But once we do, we can move weather systems that are, you know, really horrible for others. We can bring peace in areas where there's war. Prayer is the tool of the multidimensional being in the omniverse.
Right. Well, we're going through a period right now where the negative, grasp or hooks into this planet are being removed right now. I mean, as we speak. And when that happens, then the ascension will naturally follow, because the wave of energy coming in from the galactic center is what is causing the ascension. I mean, it's actually...
And again, back to what's so interesting is that up until the 1500s, every society on Earth was focused on the galactic center relative to where they placed their holy sites, their temples,
right,
et cetera. And that we lost that orientation is really that which we can so easily correct, which is for everybody listening,
right,
to remember we are related to the galactic center and the galactic center to each of us.
So I think we have a lot of hope for the future. I think we're not going to have to, you know, battle evil forces and overcome all the things that we, you know, a few years ago we thought we would have to do. I think that everything's going to be taken care of. And as you say, it is important to stay positive. It is important to, when guided, send your prayers out to help others, to help the planet, to help animals. It's important to do all of that. But I think I just have a sense of hope and peace and knowing that everything is actually already handled. It's actually fine.
I believe that, but I also believe we also each have to do our jobs. And I think there was a period in which we were all sort of, you know, think globally. And I'm of the opinion now, think locally. We're already global citizens. If each of us in a listening audience and you and me, and we each do our jobs in the ecosystems that we're part of to stabilize the bee population or to clean up your streams or to make sure that the airports are undermanaged, you know, there are so many things each of us can do. That's where our power is as citizens of our states. And I'm speaking to the North American audience. And so I think by going local and really focusing on what you can do in your neighborhood or around your own home or in your apartment building is the work at hand. Because it's interesting, after the horrible hurricanes in Texas, who did well? Those communities that had already established CSAs, community-supported agriculture, those who already had food markets. Within 2 days, these communities were up and taking care of each other while everybody else was waiting for the National Guard, the Army, et cetera. So I think the communities we can make locally are the answer to keeping resilience during Earth changes. You know, while, yes, I believe in the long run it's all going to work out, in the short run we're going to go through destabilization, and that's Pluto square Uranus, et cetera. But aside from astrology, it's just the natural way of transformation sometimes. Is some things have to die for other things to be born. And as the wolf teaches us, it's a continuum. It's not a here, now, and a gone then. It's always here. You're just in a different vibration. So you're physically noticeable or you're not physically noticeable. But the important thing, I think, from all of the animals and what they are teaching us and reminding us is that any kind deed any of us can do to liberate anybody else or anything else from an imprisonment of abuse, whether it's somebody next door who's beating their wife or somebody else who's, you know, destroying the crops in your neighborhood with poison agricultural practices. These are things we can each take some responsibility for. Doesn't mean to put yourself in harm's way, but you can do it in such a way that your voice is heard. And I think it's just really important that people take part in transformation in a very positive way, whatever that is that each of them is drawn to. It could be just being nice to somebody in the grocery store.
That's true. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. The website is www.whitespiritanimals.com, and that's the easiest way to look at that. Some of my other work is at my personal website, Zohara, Z-O-H-A-R-A, online.com. And then with my husband for 30-some years, like yourself, we've been broadcasting. We have wonderful guests like you do, and that can be found at www.21stcenturyradio.com. And my publisher is Inner Traditions Bear & Company. I do want to put in a thank you to them, because there aren't many publishing companies in the world that support authors who are using psi abilities, you know, whether it's intuition, psychic receiving, telepathic dreaming, who enable authors to share these tools and stories, and I thank them deeply.
Yeah, I've interviewed a lot of authors from Bear & Company. I agree with you. They support the spiritual community.
Yeah, and I, if I have a minute, the most important thing at the very end of my journey was a buffalo, a herd leader, came to me, and he was like a tribal mm-hmm. chief representing the 160 million great buffalo that were on our continent. We were on a mountaintop plateau overlooking an entire cosmopolitan city where the range was, and standing together, he shared that, quote, when any one of us, human, animal, plant, or mineral, fulfills our purpose on Earth, we experience the greatest love there is.
That's great. That's a great quote.
Yeah. So that was a buffalo teaching. Yeah, if you read the book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, you will be delighted with how wise our stewards are, that they are kin. They are not below us. They are equal to us. They just have a different purpose. You know, human entitlement, which people blame on Darwin, was the furthest from the truth of Darwin's teachings. Darwin was most interested in love and felt that the species entitlement humans call for themselves, meaning our ability to destroy and ruin, is the mm-hmm. greatest aberration in our psyche that there is. So Darwin
right.
gets blamed for things he never did or said.
Well, they used his teaching to justify a whole series of government and corporate and military actions. So, you know, the survival of the fittest was used as an idea behind a lot of things that they wanted to
yeah.
achieve. But all of that came through the cabal, through the, you know, through the governments, through the corporations, through the banking
system. And the church,
system.
Which institutionalized
and the church.
It.
No, that's true, and the church. And all of that is currently being disbanded. The source of that is being disbanded as we speak. So
yeah.
there's
you
a
have
lot
any
to
consciousness, like you say, and I agree, and all the physicists we know talk about, is our root and our future. And we just have to remember that. It's all of us together, or it's all of us together. And that's the
right.
truth. It doesn't matter how separate we feel, we're not.
Right. That's very, very true. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delightful interview.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Kolb.
And we have been interviewing Saara Hieronymus, who is the author of White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. Next week, we will be having Dr. Eric Love on, Effortless Healing with the Bach Flower Essences for the Emotional and Physical. And then Ted Winslow, who is a musician, will be on the 10th, the Next Frequency Generation Revolution. And then Barbara Hand Clough, Revelations of the Aquarian Age on the 17th. Thank you so much for joining us. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.